Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Nellis et al., Assessing the Reliability of the Bleeding Assessment Scale in Critically Ill Children, or BASIC, Definition, a Prospective Cohort Study. Objectives: to determine the reliability of the bleeding assessment scale in critically ill children, or BASIC, definition of bleeding severity in a diverse cohort of critically ill children. Design: prospective cohort study. Setting: 8 mixed PICUs in the Netherlands, Israel, and the United States. Subjects: children ages 0 to 18 years admitted to participating PICUs from January 1, 2020 to December 31, 2022, with bleeding noted by bedside nurse. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: the bleeding events were classified as minimal, moderate, or severe according to the BASIC definition by 2 independent physicians at 2 different time points. Patient demographic data, laboratory values, and clinical outcomes were collected. 328 patients were enrolled. The overall inter-rater reliability was substantial, with a weighted Kappa coefficient of 0.736 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.683 to 0.789, and the intra-rater reliability was almost perfect, with a weighted Kappa coefficient of 0.816 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.769 to 0.863. The platelet count, prothrombin time, activated partial thromboplastin time, and fibrinogen levels were associated with bleeding severity, but the international normalized ratio was not. The platelet count p-value was equal to 0.008. The prothrombin time p-value was equal to 0.004. The activated partial thromboplastin time p-value was equal to 0.025. The fibrinogen level p-value was equal to 0.035. And the international normalized ratio p-value was equal to 0.195. Patients were transfused blood components in response to any bleeding in 31% of cases and received hemostatic medications in 9% of cases. More severe bleeding was associated with increased 28-day mortality, longer hospital length of stay, and more days receiving inotropic support. Conclusions: the BASIC definition is a reliable tool for identifying and classifying bleeding in critically ill children. Implementing this definition into clinical and research practice may provide a consistent and reliable evaluation of bleeding. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Elliott et al., Quantity of Caloric Support After Pediatric Severe Traumatic Brain Injury, Description of Associated Outcomes in a Single Retrospective Center Cohort from 2010 to 2022. Objectives: to examine the relationship between adequacy of caloric nutritional support during the first week after severe traumatic brain injury, or TBI, and outcome. Design: single-center retrospective cohort from 2010 to 2022. Setting: tertiary care children's hospital with a level 1 trauma center. Patients: children younger than 18 years with PICU stay greater than 7 days for management of TBI who had severe TBI defined as Glasgow Coma Scale or GCS score less than or equal to 8 at initial presentation, and or placement of an intracranial pressure monitor or external ventricular drain and or decompressive hemicraniectomy. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: a total of 93 patients were identified with a median age of 46 months, 53% were male, median GCS was 5, hospital mortality was 4%. Caloric goal was assigned by a dietitian, and the proportion of prescribed calories delivered to each patient over the first 7 days of PICU admission were analyzed. At the end of the first 7 days post-injury, overall median caloric adequacy was 42% with an interquartile range of 28 to 62%, and overall median protein adequacy was 48% with an interquartile range of 29 to 61%. We failed to identify an association between adequacy of caloric support and greater odds of higher functional status scale score or higher Glasgow outcome scale extended for pediatric score at discharge. However, at outpatient follow-up, prior adequacy of PICU caloric support was associated with greater odds of worse functional status scale score and worse Glasgow outcome scale extended for pediatric score. Functional status scale score had multiplicative increase per 10% increase in calories, of 1.1 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.03 to 1.18 and a p-value equal to 0.002. And the Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended for Pediatric score had multiplicative increase of 1.16 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.08 to 1.27 and a p-value less than 0.001. Conclusions. In pediatric patients with severe TBI, there is an association between delivery of a greater proportion of their goal calories during the first 7 days after injury and greater odds of worse outcome at outpatient follow-up. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Songer et al. Timing of palliative care consultation and end-of-life care intensity in pediatric patients with advanced heart disease, single-center retrospective cohort study from 2014 to 2022. Objectives. Pediatric patients with advanced heart disease often receive high-intensity medical care at the end of life. In this study, we aim to determine whether receipt and timing of pediatric palliative care consultation was associated with end-of-life care intensity of pediatric patients with advanced heart disease. Design. Retrospective cohort study. Setting. Single-center 16-bed cardiac ICU or CICU in a children's hospital in the Mountain West. Patients. Pediatric patients 0 to 21 years with advanced heart disease treated in the CICU and subsequently died from January 2014 to December 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We compared demographics, end-of-life characteristics, and care, including medical interventions and mortality characteristics for patients by receipt and timing of pediatric palliative care. It est greater than or equal to 30 days or less than 30 days of death using chi-square and Wilcoxon rank sum tests. Of 218 patients, 78 or 36% did not receive pediatric palliative care, 76 or 35% received early pediatric palliative care, and 64 or 29% received late pediatric palliative care. Compared with patients who did not receive pediatric palliative care, patients receiving pediatric palliative care had lower end-of-life care intensity, 77% versus 96% with a p-value equal to 0.004, and fewer invasive interventions within 14 days of death, 74% versus 92% with a p-value equal to 0.004. Receipt of pediatric palliative care versus not was associated with a lower rate of death during cardiopulmonary resuscitation, 12% versus 32% with a p-value equal to 0.004, and more use of comfort care, 23% versus 3% with a p-value equal to 0.004. Among patients receiving pediatric palliative care, early pediatric palliative care was associated with fewer invasive interventions within 14 days of death, 65% versus 85% with a p-value equal to 0.033. Care intensity was high for patients with early and late pediatric palliative care. Conclusions. Early pediatric palliative care was associated with fewer invasive interventions within 14 days of death, yet the care intensity at end of life remained high. With early pediatric palliative care, families likely received timely psychosocial and advanced care planning support without significantly altering goals of care. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation article by Batensky et al. Mechanical thromboprophylaxis and hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism among critically ill adolescents, a U.S. Pediatric Health Information Systems Registry study from 2016 to 2023. Objectives: to estimate the rate of mechanical thromboprophylaxis prescription among critically ill adolescents using a multicenter administrative database and determine whether mechanical thromboprophylaxis prescription is inversely associated with hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism. Design. Multicenter observational retrospective study of the Pediatric Health Information Systems, or FHIS, registry cohort from January 2016 to December 2023. Setting. 30 PICUs located within quaternary pediatric referral centers in the United States. Patients. Critically ill children 12 to 17 years old, excluding encounters with a principal diagnosis at admission of venous thromboembolism. Interventions. Mechanical thromboprophylaxis prescription within the first 24 hours of hospitalization. Measurements and main results. A total of 107,804 children met the study criteria, of which 21,124, or 19.6%, were prescribed mechanical thromboprophylaxis. Hospital center prescribing rates ranged from 1.4% to 65.4%, and decreased by 1.6% per year from 28.2% in 2016 to 17.1% in 2023. As compared with those without mechanical thromboprophylaxis, those with mechanical thromboprophylaxis more frequently had a concurrent central venous catheter, 17.2% versus 9.4% with a p-value less than 0.001, underwent invasive mechanical ventilation, 37.4% versus 24.8% with a p-value less than 0.001, were admitted for a primary surgical indication, 30.9% versus 12.7% with a p-value less than 0.001, and experienced a longer median duration of hospitalization, 7 days with an interquartile range of 4 to 15 days versus 4 days with an interquartile range of 2 to 9 days, and a p-value less than 0.001. Hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism occurred in 2.7% of the study sample and was more common among those with, as compared with without, prescription of mechanical thromboprophylaxis, 4% versus 2.4% with a p-value less than 0.001. In multivariable logistic regression models for hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism adjusting for salient prothrombotic risk factors, we failed to identify an association between mechanical thromboprophylaxis and greater odds of hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism among low, moderate, and high-risk tiers. However, we cannot exclude the possibility of 17 to 50% greater odds of a hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism in this population. Conclusions. In this multicenter FIS cohort from 2016 to 2023, the prescribing patterns for mechanical thromboprophylaxis among critically ill adolescents showed a low rate of mechanical thromboprophylaxis prescription, 19.6%, that varied widely across institutions, decreased annually over the study period by 1.6% per year, and was not independently associated with hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism risk reduction. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by McMullen et al. Targeted temperature management after pediatric cardiac arrest, a quality improvement program with multidisciplinary implementation in the PICU. Objectives. We aim to implement a post-cardiac arrest targeted temperature management bundle to reduce the percent of time with a fever from 7% to 3.5%. Design. A prospective quality improvement or QI initiative utilizing the method for improvement. The pre-intervention historical control period was February 2019 to March 2021, and the intervention test period was April 2021 to June 2022. Setting: the PICU of a freestanding tertiary children's hospital in the United States. Patients: pediatric patients 2 days to 18 years old who experienced cardiac arrest, received greater than or equal to 2 minutes of chest compressions, required invasive mechanical ventilation post-resuscitation, and had no documented limitations of care. Interventions. We developed and implemented a targeted temperature management bundle that included standard temperature goals, instructions and training on cooling blanket use, scheduled prescription of antipyretics, an algorithm for managing shivering, and standardized orders in our electronic health record. Measurements and main results. We reviewed data from 29 patients in the pre-intervention period and studied 46 in the intervention period. In comparison with historical controls, the reduction in median percentage of febrile time per patient or time greater than 38 degrees Celsius associated with the targeted temperature management bundle was 0% versus 7%. The interquartile range for the intervention group was 0 to 3%, and the interquartile range for the pre-intervention group was 0 to 13%, with a p-value less than 0.001. The intervention period versus pre-intervention period was associated with fewer patients with fever at any time, 16 of 46 versus 21 of 29, a mean reduction of 37%, 95% confidence interval of 13.8 to 54.8%, and a p-value equal to 0.002. We failed to identify an association between the intervention period versus pre-intervention and the development of hypothermia, defined as 35 degrees Celsius, with this occurring in 8 of 46 versus 3 of 29, a mean change of 7%, a 95% confidence interval of negative 10.9% to 21.8%, and a p-value equal to 0.4. Conclusions. In this QI project, we have demonstrated that implementation of a targeted temperature management bundle is associated with reduced duration and frequency of fever in patients who survive cardiac arrest. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Yang et al. using implementation science to assess barriers to agreement on sedation goal setting and assessment. Objectives: sedation assessment and goal setting using a validated assessment tool are key components of the ICU Liberation Bundle. Appropriate integration of these bundle elements into daily practice remains challenging. Understanding barriers is an important step toward implementation of these best practice bundle elements. Design: two-phased explanatory mixed methods assessment carried out from 2022 to 2023. Setting: 40-bed quaternary PICU. Subjects: bedside nurses and prescribers caring for mechanically ventilated patients on sedative infusions. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: 41 nurses and 32 prescribers participated in the Phase 1 pre-education assessments in 2022. We identified lack of correlation between the provider's stated State Behavioral Scale, or SBS, numerical goal and descriptive goal, and hypothesized that this discrepancy was either due to a knowledge gap or disagreement on sedation goals. To investigate this hypothesis, we performed a Phase 2 assessment from 2022 to 2023, starting with a multi-pronged educational activity, followed by a repeat survey that included a qualitative interview. 190 nurses and 45 prescribers received the educational activity. 28 nurses and 22 prescribers participated in the Phase 2 assessments with the qualitative interview. Although correlation of the sedation goal between providers improved, it remained poor. Subsequent qualitative interview data indicated that the reasons for persistent disagreement in the sedation goal for a given patient were related to individual providers' beliefs and attitudes toward sedation, rather than lack of understanding about using the SBS to set a target sedation goal. Conclusions: barriers to setting and managing daily patient sedation goals in the PICU extended beyond providers' knowledge gaps. An improved understanding of underlying barriers is essential for successful implementation of evidence-based sedation guidelines. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by Vadi Vilan et al. Iron Deficiency Anemia in Children During and After PICU Stay, Single Center Retrospective Cohort from 2021 to 2022. Objectives: the primary objective was to determine iron deficiency anemia monitoring practices in children during PICU stay. A secondary objective was to determine the current follow-up practices for iron deficiency anemia after PICU discharge. Design: retrospective observational study of 2 years from 2021 to 2022. Setting: single-center academic PICU in the United States. Subjects: all patients younger than 18 years and excluded patients who died in the PICU or within 6 months of PICU discharge. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: anemia was defined by a hemoglobin concentration of less than 11 grams per deciliter. Iron deficiency was defined by either a ferritin of less than 30 nanograms per milliliter or a transferrin saturation of less than or equal to 20%. Suspicion for functional iron deficiency was defined by ferritin greater than or equal to 30 nanograms per milliliter and transferrin saturation less than or equal to 20%, given the hyperferritinemic effect of inflammation. We documented serum iron, total iron binding capacity, transferrin saturation, ferritin, and hemoglobin at PICU admission and discharge in 3 and 6 months after discharge. Overall, 913 of 1,275 met the inclusion criteria, and 492 patients had a hemoglobin of less than 11 grams per deciliter. Only 93 of 492, or 18.9%, had iron studies at any time during the PICU stay. Among the 93 patients with iron studies, 20 patients, or 22%, were lost to follow-up. Of the remaining 73 patients, 67 of 73 had a hemoglobin checked at 3 months, of which 37 of 67, or 55%, were still anemic. At 6 months, there were 64 of 73 patients who had a hemoglobin checked, of which 32 of 64, or 50%, were still anemic. At 3 months, 39 of 73, or 53%, had iron studies performed. Of these, 13 of 39 had iron deficiency, 12 of 39 had suspicion for functional iron deficiency, and 14 of 39 had neither iron deficiency nor suspicion for functional iron deficiency. At 6 months, 35 of 73, or 48%, had iron studies. Of these, 10 of 35 had iron deficiency, 11 of 35 had suspicion for functional iron deficiency, and 14 of 35 had neither iron deficiency nor suspicion for functional iron deficiency. Conclusions: detection of iron deficiency and follow-up after PICU stay remain inadequate. We recommend that future studies assess the value of screening all critically ill patients for iron deficiency at the time of discharge and follow up as necessary. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation article by Solodiak et al. Development and preliminary testing of the withdrawal assessment tool Alpha-2 Agonist, an assessment instrument for monitoring iatrogenic withdrawal symptoms in children receiving an Alpha-2 Agonist. Objectives: to develop and conduct preliminary testing of the withdrawal assessment tool Alpha-2 Agonist, or WAT-A2A, to monitor dexmedetomidine and clonidine withdrawal symptoms in acutely ill children. Design: three-phase instrument development study. Phase 1, retrospective chart review of symptoms exhibited by children with documented dexmedetomidine withdrawal. Phase 2, WAT-A2A instrument construction based on Phase 1 data. And Phase 3, prospective testing of the WAT-A2A in children weaning from alpha-2 agonists, or A2As. Setting: academic freestanding children's hospital. Patients: acutely ill children weaning from at least 5 days of dexmedetomidine. Excluded were children concurrently weaning other sedatives. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Phase 1. In 83 of 303 children weaning from at least 5 days of dexmedetomidine who had clinician documentation and were managed for A2A withdrawal, 88%, or N equal to 72, exhibited at least a 20% increase in heart rate. 83%, or N equals 69, exhibited agitation or change in usual state behavior. 46%, or N equal to 38, exhibited at least a 20% increase in diastolic blood pressure. And when documented, 56%, or 27 of 48, exhibited tremors during their A2A withdrawal episode. Phase 2. The WAT-A2A was constructed based on Phase 1 data and includes 4 items: heart rate, state behavior, diastolic blood pressure, and tremors. Phase 3. The WAT-A2A was tested and performed well in 82 children weaning from A2A. The total WAT-A2A score correlated with clinician subjective assessment of A2A withdrawal, with a Spearman correlation equal to 0.5 and a p-value less than 0.001. Inter-rater agreement comparing paired ratings of prospectively collected WAT-A2A data indicated moderate inter-rater reliability. Conclusions: acutely ill children receiving sedation with an A2A for more than 5 days may develop physiologic dependence requiring gradual dosing reductions. While further psychometric testing is advised, the WAT-A2A provides an objective instrument to help clinicians quantify dexmedetomidine withdrawal symptoms in acutely ill children and may facilitate A2A weaning and limit unnecessary variation in practice. Abstract 9 is a clinical investigation article by Hassan et al. Serum phosphorus and hypophosphatemia during therapy of diabetic ketoacidosis in children, single-center retrospective cohort study from 2016 to 2022. Objectives: to assess factors associated with serum phosphorus and hypophosphatemia in children with type 1 diabetes mellitus treated for diabetic ketoacidosis, or DKA. Design: retrospective cohort. Setting: community-based PICU in a university-affiliated hospital. Patients: patients 1 to 20 years old with type 1 diabetes hospitalized for DKA from July 1, 2016 to July 31, 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We collected age, sex, duration of type 1 diabetes, conscious state at presentation, and most recent glycohemoglobin level. Phosphorus was tested initially and then every 4 hours. Probability of hypophosphatemia and time to hypophosphatemia and hospital length of stay were analyzed via binomial and linear mixed effects regression analyses, respectively. A total of 852 diabetic ketoacidosis episodes occurred in 365 patients, 46.3% female, median age 14.7 years, of which 158, or 18.5% episodes, were new onset type 1 diabetes mellitus. Hypophosphatemia developed during 656 of 852, or 77% of episodes, with a median onset of 8 hours and an interquartile range of 4.7 to 11.9 hours. 49 of 852 episodes were severe hypophosphatemia, with a median onset of 12 hours and an interquartile range of 8.1 to 17.6 hours following initiation of therapy. Higher glycohemoglobin was associated with greater odds of hypophosphatemia with an odds ratio of 1.22 and a p-value less than 0.001. However, lower odds of hypophosphatemia were associated with older age, male, longer type 1 diabetes duration, and having initial normal conscious state. Odds ratio for older age was 0.89 with a p-value less than 0.01. Odds ratio for male sex was 0.11 with a p-value equal to 0.01. Odds ratio for longer type 1 diabetes duration was 0.87 with a p-value less than 0.001. And odds ratio for having initial normal conscious state was 0.18 with a p-value less than 0.01. Older age, type 1 diabetes duration, and initial serum phosphorus were associated with later hypophosphatemia. Older age was 3% per year with a p-value equal to 0.02. Type 1 diabetes duration was 4.1% per year with a p-value equal to 0.01. And initial serum phosphorus was 23.4% per milligrams per deciliter with a p-value less than 0.001. Length of stay was shorter with increased type 1 diabetes duration and normal conscious state, but longer with increasing glycohemoglobin. With increased type 1 diabetes duration, it was 3.6% per year, with a p-value less than 0.001, and with normal conscious state, it was 33.1% shorter, with a p-value less than 0.001. With increasing glycohemoglobin, it was 4%, with a p-value less than 0.001. All patients survived with normal neurologic function. Conclusions. Higher glycohemoglobin was associated with greater odds of hypophosphatemia and longer length of stay. Older male, longer duration of type 1 diabetes, and conscious at admission were factors associated with the lower odds of developing hypophosphatemia and with later onset when it occurred. Hypophosphatemia was associated with longer length of stay. Abstract 10 is a PCCM trial by McMichael et al. Prospective randomized pilot study comparing bivalirudin versus heparin in neonatal and pediatric extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. Objectives: to test feasibility of a randomized control trial or RCT with an endpoint of time at goal anticoagulation in children on extracorporeal membrane oxygenation or ECMO randomized to receive bivalirudin versus unfractionated heparin. Design: open-label pilot randomized control trial carried out from 2018 to 2021. Setting: single-center quaternary U.S. pediatric hospital. Patients: children 0 days to younger than 18 years old supported with ECMO in the PICU or cardiovascular ICU. Interventions: randomization to bivalirudin versus unfractionated heparin while on ECMO. Measurements and main results: 16 patients were randomized to bivalirudin and 14 patients were randomized to heparin. There was no difference in the primary outcome, time spent at goal anticoagulation, for patients randomized to bivalirudin compared with those randomized to heparin. While hemorrhagic complications were similar between study groups, thrombotic complications were higher, with 6 of 16 patients in the bivalirudin group having one or more circuit changes, compared with 0 of 14 patients in the heparin group, with a mean difference of 37.5%, a 95% confidence interval of 8.7 to 61.4%, and a p-value equal to 0.02. Patients in the bivalirudin group received less packed red blood cell transfusions versus those receiving heparin. The bivalirudin group received 6.3 milliliters per kilogram per day with an interquartile range of 2.5 to 8.4 milliliters per kilogram per day, and the heparin group received 12.2 milliliters per kilogram per day with an interquartile range of 5.5 to 14.5 milliliters per kilogram per day, and a p-value equal to 0.02. Conclusions. In this single-center pilot randomized control trial carried out from 2018 to 2021, we found that the test of anticoagulation therapy of bivalirudin versus heparin during ECMO was feasible. Larger multicenter studies are required to further assess the safety and efficacy of bivalirudin for pediatric ECMO. Abstract 11 is a PCCM trial by Faustino et al. Protocol for the catheter-related early thromboprophylaxis with enoxaparin, or CREET, studies. Objectives: in post-hoc analyses of our previous Phase 2b Bayesian Randomized Clinical Trial, or RCT, prophylaxis with enoxaparin reduced central venous catheter, or CVC-associated deep vein thrombosis, or CADVT, in critically ill older children, but not in infants. The goal of the catheter-related early thromboprophylaxis with enoxaparin, or CREET, studies is to investigate this newly identified age-dependent heterogeneity in the efficacy of prophylaxis with enoxaparin against CADVT in critically ill children. Design. Two parallel multicenter Bayesian superiority explanatory RCTs, that is, phase 3 for older children and phase 2b for infants, and an exploratory mechanistic nested case control study. Setting. At least 15 PICUs across the United States. Patients. Older children 1 to 17 years old, N equal to 90, and infants older than 36 weeks corrected gestational age younger than 1 year old, N equal to 168, admitted to the PICU with an untunneled CVC inserted in the prior 24 hours. Subjects with or at high risk of clinically relevant bleeding will be excluded. Interventions. Prophylactic dose of enoxaparin starting at 0.5 mg per kilogram, then adjusted to anti-10A range of 0.2 to 0.5 international units per milliliter for older children, and therapeutic dose of enoxaparin starting at 1.5 mg per kilogram, then adjusted to anti-10A range of greater than 0.5 to 1 international units per milliliter, or 0.2 to 0.5 international units per milliliter for infants while CVC is in situ. Measurements and main results. Randomization is 2 to 1 to enoxaparin or usual care, no enoxaparin, for older children, and 1 to 1 to 1 to either of two anti-10A ranges of enoxaparin or usual care for infants. Ultrasonography will be performed after removal of CVC to assess for CADVT. Subjects will be monitored for bleeding. Platelet poor plasma will be analyzed for markers of thrombin generation. Samples from subjects with CADVT will be countermatched 1-to-1 to subjects without CADVT from the opposite trial arm. Institutional Review Board approved the CREET studies on July 1, 2021. Enrollment is ongoing with planned completion in July 2025 for older children and July 2026 for infants. This concludes the abstracts for the January 2025 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.